Sometimes the most fascinating deep dives come from the most unexpected places. And today we're cracking open a real-life court case.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a drunk driving accident with a tragic outcome.
Okay.
But the real story is about something much deeper.
Deeper than a drunk driving accident.
Yeah, legal causation.
Ooh,
Right,
interesting.
exactly.
It's a case that really makes you think about responsibility and the limits of blame. I mean, we have a drunk driver, an accident, and a death, right?
Right.
But how does the law determine who's really responsible when there's a whole chain of events?
Yeah, it's like those domino videos where one thing knocks into another and another until you get this huge unexpected result.
Yeah, I've seen those.
So we've got excerpts from the actual court opinion in this case.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it starts with a pretty standard DUI situation, right?
Okay. Yeah, walk me through it.
Okay, so a guy, we'll call him the defendant, is driving drunk, makes a bad turn, and slams into another car.
Right. And that initial crash is the textbook definition of what we call factual causation. Okay.
It's that simple, but for Tess. But for the defendant's drunk driving, that first accident wouldn't have happened.
Okay, that makes sense.
Right.
Yeah. But here's where it gets interesting.
Okay.
So the two guys in the car that got hit are shaken up, but they're okay. Their car's messed up, so they get out to check on things. And as you might have guessed, that's when things take a turn for the worse.
Oh, no.
Another car comes along and hits one of the guys who was in the first accident, critically killing him.
Oh, that's awful.
It's heartbreaking. And now suddenly, we're not just talking about a DUI anymore. We're
Right.
talking about a death. So how do we unravel this chain of events and figure out who's responsible?
That's where this concept of proximate causation comes in.
Okay.
It's not just about whether the initial action caused something to happen. It's about whether the final outcome was a direct and natural result, or if there was something else, a superseding cause that broke the chain of responsibility.
All right, superseding cause.
Yes, this is where it gets really complex, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so walk me through this.
The court actually uses this really interesting analogy.
Okay.
Imagine someone stabs a person, and that person dies later at the hospital.
Right.
Now, even if the doctor was negligent, maybe even really bad at their job, the stabber is still legally responsible for the death.
Okay.
But if the doctor did something intentionally harmful, like giving the patient the wrong medication on purpose, that would be a superseding cause.
Right.
That doctor's action breaks the link back to the original stabber.
So it's not just about the initial action.
Right.
It's about whether something else swooped in and changed the course of events in a way that was so significant, it essentially overrides the original cause.
Exactly. And applying that to our case, the big question becomes,
Yeah, what is it?
was the deceased's decision to re-enter the roadway a superseding cause? He had made it to the side of the road,
Right.
he was out of the immediate danger zone,
Right.
but he chose to go back, and that's when he was hit by the other car.
So now we're talking about individual choices and how those choices factor into the legal equation.
Exactly.
Did the initial drunk driving accident force him into that decision?
Good question.
Or did he make a choice that introduced a whole new set of risks?
Right, and there's another layer to this whole
Oh
thing.
boy.
It turns out the judge in the original trial made a mistake when he explained superseding cause to the jury.
Really?
He told them a superseding cause had to be the only ally cause of the death, which is just plain wrong legally.
Oh, wow.
That alone is enough to overturn the drunk driver's conviction for causing the death.
Wow. So even if the jury had the right definition of superseding cause, there's still this whole question of whether there was enough evidence to actually convict him. And
Exactly.
that's where the court dives into some pretty heavy legal theory, right?
Yeah, they bring in concepts like the apparent safety doctrine and voluntary human intervention, which sound really complicated, but are actually getting at some really fundamental ideas about responsibility and choice.
This is where I start to feel like I need a law degree to follow along. But
Yeah.
I'm guessing these legal concepts are important because they help us understand the court's reasoning, right?
Absolutely. They give us a framework for untangling this mess and figuring out where one person's responsibility ends and another's begins.
Okay, so I'm ready to untangle
And
this.
that's what we're going to explore next.
Okay, you've officially piqued my curiosity. All right, so before we got into all this, we were starting to get into some pretty complex legal territory with this idea of superseding
Right.
cause.
Yeah.
And you mentioned these concepts of apparent safety doctrine and voluntary human intervention,
Yeah.
which, to be honest, sound a bit intimidating.
I get that, but they're actually rooted in some pretty common sense ideas.
Okay.
So the apparent safety doctrine basically says that once someone reaches a place of safety, their further actions might break that chain of responsibility.
Okay, that actually makes sense. So it's like if I'm walking down the street and someone throws a rock at me,
yeah,
but misses, and then I decide to run across a busy highway and get hit by a car.
Mm-hmm.
That's on me, right?
Yeah, yeah.
My decision to run into traffic wasn't a direct result of the rock being thrown.
Exactly. The court in our case uses a different example, but the principle is the same.
Okay.
They talk about a case where a woman was fleeing from her abusive husband.
Okay.
She was in a dangerous situation.
Right.
But she reached a point where she could have found safety at her father's house.
So even though she was initially fleeing a real threat, once she had that option of safety, her decision to stay out in the cold and ultimately freeze to death was considered a break in the chain of responsibility.
Right, and that's a really tough concept to grapple with. You have this initial wrongdoer, the abusive husband.
Right.
But the victim's own actions ended up contributing to the tragic outcome.
It's like the court is trying to find that point where one person's responsibility ends and another person's begins.
Yeah.
But how do you apply that to our drunk driving case?
Right.
The guy who died had made it to the side of the road.
Right.
He was out of his car, off the pavement.
Yeah.
He was seemingly safe.
That's the turning point in the legal analysis.
Okay.
From that moment on, his decision to go back into the roadway, knowing there was a disabled car and potential for oncoming traffic, introduced a new element of risk.
It's almost as if reaching that place of safety, that side of the road created a kind of reset button.
Mm-hmm.
His initial escape from the accident, that was a direct result of the drunk driver's actions.
Right.
But his decision to go back into the road, that was a new choice with its own set of consequences.
Right, and that brings us to this idea of voluntary human intervention.
Okay.
The law recognizes that individuals have free will.
Mm-hmm.
We make choices, and those choices have consequences.
Right.
In this case, the deceased made a conscious decision to go back into the roadway.
Right.
A decision that tragically led to his death.
So even though we might feel inclined to put the blame squarely on the drunk driver,
yeah,
the court is saying we can't ignore the role of individual choice in this tragedy. Mm,
exactly. It's not about excusing the drunk driver's actions. He was clearly in the wrong to get behind the wheel intoxicated.
Right.
But it's about acknowledging that even in situations where someone acts negligently, we still have a responsibility for our own safety.
This is such a complicated issue. It's like this case is forcing us to confront the limits of blame.
Mm-hmm.
We want to hold someone accountable when something terrible happens.
Right.
But the law has to operate on more than just emotion.
It does. It has to consider all the contributing factors,
right,
all the choices and consequences, and try to find a just resolution.
Yeah.
And that's not always easy.
So where does that leave us with our drunk driver?
Right.
His conviction for causing death was overturned.
Right.
But I'm guessing that doesn't mean he gets off scot-free.
Right. He was still convicted on the lesser charge of driving while impaired.
Okay.
Which carries its own set of penalties.
Right.
And the prosecutor could still decide to retry him on the more serious charge now that there's a clearer understanding of the legal issues involved.
This whole deep dive is really making me think about the ripple effects of our actions.
Yeah.
How one bad decision can set off a chain of events with unintended and often tragic consequences.
Absolutely. And it's not just about drunk driving. This case highlights a fundamental truth about life.
What's that?
Our choices matter.
Mm-hmm.
Even in situations where we might feel like a victim of circumstance, we still have a responsibility for our own actions and the choices we make.
This is heavy stuff.
Yeah.
But it's also incredibly thought-provoking, and there's still so much to unpack here.
Yeah, definitely.
We need to talk about what this all means for us.
Yeah.
For our listener.
Yeah.
Anyone who's ever grappled with questions of responsibility, blame, and the complexities of the legal system.
Right. We're going to get into all of that in our next segment, so stay tuned, because this conversation is far from over.
Okay, so we've spent this whole deep dive dissecting this drunk driving case, and honestly, it's left me with more questions than answers.
Yeah, I bet.
Like, how do you actually apply these legal concepts to real life situations?
Right. It's tough.
That's the challenge, isn't it?
Yeah.
The law tries to provide a framework for understanding responsibility, but it can't always capture the nuances of human behavior and the unpredictability of life.
I mean, let's say I'm on that jury.
Okay.
I've heard all the arguments.
Mm.
I understand, or at least I think I understand, superseding cause, apparent safety, all that.
Yeah.
How do I actually make a decision? Where do you even start to draw the line?
Well, it comes down to looking at the specific facts of the case and asking some tough questions.
Like what?
Well, was the final outcome a foreseeable consequence of the initial action?
Okay.
Were there other factors that intervened, creating a new chain of events?
Mm-hmm.
And did the individuals involved make choices that contributed to the outcome?
It's like this case throws a wrench into the whole idea of but-for causation.
Right.
But for the drunk driver getting behind the wheel, none of this would have happened.
Right.
But the court is saying that's not the whole story.
Right.
Exactly. The court is acknowledging that the drunk driver's actions created a dangerous situation.
Uh-huh.
But they're also saying that we can't ignore the subsequent choices made by the other people involved, including the victim.
That must be a really difficult thing for a jury to grapple with.
Yeah, for sure.
You have this gut feeling that the drunk driver is ultimately responsible for the tragedy.
Right.
But then you have to consider these legal nuances and the role of individual choice.
It is, and it highlights the tension between wanting to find someone to blame when something bad happens and the need to apply the law fairly and objectively.
This whole concept of foreseeability keeps coming up.
Yeah.
Could the drunk driver have foreseen that the guys in the other car would get out to check on things?
Right.
Could he have foreseen that one of them would then decide to go back into the road? It just seems impossible to predict all the potential consequences of your actions.
You've hit on a key point. It's not about predicting the future with absolute certainty. It's about assessing what a reasonable person would consider likely outcomes of their actions. And in this case, the court seemed to be saying that while the initial accident was a foreseeable consequence of drunk driving, the victim's decision to re-enter the roadway was not.
So even though we can't anticipate every possible outcome, we're still expected to act responsibly and consider the potential consequences of our choices.
Yeah.
That puts a lot of weight on individual decision-making, even in situations that feel out of our control.
Absolutely. This case is a stark reminder that we all have a responsibility for our own safety,
mm-hmm.
even when someone else acts negligently. And it's a reminder that our choices, even seemingly small ones, can have far-reaching and often unforeseen consequences.
You know, it's easy to distance ourselves from a story like this and think, well, I would never make a decision like that.
Right.
I would never put myself in that kind of danger.
Uh-huh.
But the truth is, we're all making choices every day, big and small, that have the potential to set off a chain of events we could never have predicted.
That's so true. This case isn't just about drunk driving or legal technicalities.
Yeah.
It's a reflection of the complexity of human actions and the ripple effects they can have.
Right.
It's a story about responsibility, choice, and the often messy search for justice in a world where things are rarely black and white.
So after this deep dive into causation, superseding causes, and the limits of blame, what's the takeaway for our listeners?
Right.
What do we do with all this information?
I think the key takeaway is awareness.
Okay.
Awareness of the potential consequences of our actions, awareness of the choices we make, and awareness of the fact that even in the face of tragedy, there isn't always a simple answer or a clear villain.
And maybe a little bit of humility, too.
Yeah.
None of us can predict the future, but we can strive to make responsible choices, knowing that our actions can have far-reaching impacts both on ourselves and on those around us.
Well said, and as always, learning never stops. This deep dive has certainly opened up a new perspective for me.
And for me as well, and to our listeners, we encourage you to keep pondering these questions.
Mm-mm.
Think about how these concepts of responsibility and causation might play out in your own lives, your own decisions, because ultimately this case is a reminder that the law isn't just something that happens in a courtroom. It's woven into the fabric of our everyday lives.
Exactly. And understanding those connections, that's where true knowledge and insight begin.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the complexities of causation. Until next time, keep asking questions, keep exploring, and keep diving deep.